Eoch tanuyap, kuige iwans kuyens na. Hi everybody, my name is kuige iwans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yagalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Welcome to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection, your weekly report on the cooperative sector, proudly broadcasting on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman. In recognition of International Women's Day, March 8th, and the care work done largely by women, we're going to examine the way we tend to our elders, and how co-ops can make a difference to aging in place with dignity. People on the front line of seniors care are largely nurses and personal support workers. The majority are women. Many are racialized. Many are newcomers. Most have little agency, although nurses do have unions. During the pandemic, we heard about how these workers were taking on several care jobs each day just to make ends meet. Could there be a different way? And what would that mean for the staff and the seniors they assisted? Enter the Home Care Workers Co-op, the first but not last worker co-op for personal support workers in the Peterborough region of Ontario. Danielle Turpin is the founder and managing director. We first spoke in 2022 and again this week. Why did she create this worker co-op? And what difference has it made? Have a listen.
Like everything, the last little while, it seems to be, it started when COVID hit. I was working long-term care as a PSW. Loved working with my clients. That I have a passion for that, like I think most PSWs do. COVID really kind of found all the cracks in the system that people were maybe already kind of yelling about, but no one really wanted to see. And I came to realize that I wasn't able to kind of work within that system. It wasn't working for me and the type of care that I wanted to provide for the seniors, the type of care that they deserve to have. And I wasn't getting treated well and respected well, nor were any of the other workers and PSWs. In that system. So I left on a mission somehow to create a better system. And I came up with the concept with some help and support of other peers and in the co-op world about having a PSW co-op. And that started in 2020, came up with the idea in 2019, started officially in 2020. Yeah.
And where did you come to the idea of like making it a cooperative as opposed to just a nonprofit? Why a co-op? Why embracing those cooperative values?
Well, I think it stems from people who are in the care sector for the most part are women, racialized women. And we have a lot of new Canadians in this system. Care sector work has always predominantly been, devalued and underpaid. So I really felt that in order for us to create a system or a model that is going to benefit not only the workers, but the clients and the people who are going to be receiving it, we got to take care of the people who are caring for others. And I guess that was my concept. If we can take care of give good quality work environment to the PSWs, They will in turn provide good, excellent care to the clients because they're invested. And by invested in our co-op, I mean our PSWs have a real voice at the decision-making table. They are member owners. They can share in the surplus. They make decisions on quality care. They make decisions on wages and benefits and paid sick days and mileage. They are, and that's via the one member, one vote concept. So there's really no hierarchy there. And I think that that has changed the concept of, really change any concept. I guess what I'm saying is that it's allowed the PSWs in our model to feel valued again and be a real part of that healthcare team and actually feel like they have a real stake in this, right? And we need to retain them. Ultimately, our goal is to help people stay at home as long as possible. So that's where we want to find people. We want seniors to come to us before they, as an alternative to long-term care and institutional care. But we do. Some people can't do that, or they are already in home care, for example, or in institutional care. So we also do provide supports in there, but it's not paid for by the institutions. It's still direct with the family.
So, Danielle, how many worker owners do you have at this point? You've been at this for several years.
Nine.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so we're it's getting pretty good. We have and I think now that it's more established, I think the model is resonating with people and with our workers, so they're understanding and seeing that it's about a culture as well. And I think that takes time when you are a marginalized worker and jaded and kind of not feeling like you matter. I think it takes time to let that guard down and realize that there is a better system and they could be a part of it. So the first couple of years we had a small amount of members, or the first year or so, and then it's doubled now, I think, since then, fairly quickly.
What are your members saying about being part of the cooperative solution to home care?
Think being valued and understood is one of the key things that I hear a lot. That they're input, that their life, that their family obligations, all of that matter to us, and we always take that into consideration. I think that's probably also a reason why we are a women-owned operation, mostly because we want to make sure that we create an environment that is understanding of a lot of the different social needs that women have to go through, such as family and daycare and all that stuff, right?
And aging parents.
And aging parents and having to take time off work for fit, just that's kind of predominantly a women's job still in a lot of ways. So we want to make sure we can accommodate for that the best we can because we understand. I think another thing that I'm seeing a huge big part is that if they when we have our meetings and they talk about a need that they have, we don't just listen to that. We really try to take that into action and put that in action. So, example, our PSWs wanted benefits. It's been on the table for a long time. We've been wanting to talk about it. And we finally realized that this can't just be something in the future anymore. This needs to happen. So we have all of our members have full medical and dental benefits.
That's
And
really quite something.
huge.
It's huge because when we did speak a few years ago, that was something that was being talked about. But it's incredible to see that realized. How are you able to achieve that?
Well, I think we achieve that because we aren't motivated by profit. So that's number one. We're staying small, like locally and kind of small, and we reach out to other co-ops and other organizations so we can kind of share resources and pool our resources so we can work together. So as an example, our benefits have come from the cooperators, and we've been able
No
to,
surprise, no
right?
surprise there. Yep.
Right. And we did that. So they created a specific benefit plan for all the co-ops in Ontario to kind of take part of. So it doesn't matter if we're really small businesses anymore, right? That because that was the holding, that was the factor that was causing problems is these small businesses couldn't afford it. But now we have access to that because of the cooperative model.
That's outstanding and really a big boost for your worker owners and others that are working there. Not everyone who works for you is a worker owner, or
No.
no. Okay.
No.
My next question is, can you explain how home care is organized in Ontario? If there you're one worker co-op. Otherwise, do PSWs work for agencies, and are they generally for-profit agencies? Can you just give us the
Yeah,
lay of the
for sure.
land?
So most home care is for profit and private still in Ontario, and there's nine large organizations that seem to be the publicly funded subcontract service providers for the government. Almost all of those are for profit.
And so, how is that different for PSWs? You probably worked in that
Yeah.
system than working for the worker co-op. In terms of all the things that matter, especially the care that the seniors get,
Yeah.
can you tell us a bit about the differences between the care co-op versus a care agency,
For sure.
private
So care
agency?
co-op really is going for, I'll speak from the worker perspective first, and the care co-op is going to be taking the needs of its members as a number one priority. And it doesn't mean it's at the expense of its clients, but that seems to be the number one priority. So how can we manage that? So as a care co-op, we're able to offer higher wages because we're not focused on profit. We offer benefits, paid sick days, all holiday, extra holiday time, all of these things benefit client care, every single one of them. And it's so all of, and not only that, as a care co-op, because we're not motivated by profit, we are able to then say, you know what, we're going to have a 2-hour minimum. Our PSWs are going to be able to go and spend time directly with our clients, as opposed to spending a good majority of time on the road, which a lot of home care PSWs do, right? So now they're getting paid to actually do the care that they should be doing. And they get to do that in a very relational way, not task-based. This seems to be what everybody wants, but the current system isn't providing that. So in the current system, if you're publicly funded, if you're getting publicly funded care, a client may get a PSW sporadic times during the day. Maybe they don't show up. It's 20 minutes. It's different PSWs all the time. And then the PSWs are overbooked, triple booked. They're rushed. They're all over the place. So we're just trying to minimize a lot of that by slowing it down, giving PSWs some more time with the clients, their more time in the home. So they have maybe 3 or 4 clients a day as opposed to 8 or 10. And that raises the level of care, that raises the level of independence that the clients actually get to have because they can participate in doing a lot of these activities on their own because they just need some support as opposed to PSWs saying, I got to do this for you, I don't have time. And it builds relationships and helps with isolation, and it allows the workers to not be on the road all the time and having to pay out of pocket because PSWs only get paid when they're dealing directly with clients.
How is the government funding personal support workers? I know that there's been a shortfall. I know some funds were given, and I also know that there was a recent report saying that with the aging population, more than 7,500 PSWs are needed in Ontario over the next number of years.
Yeah, I don't really know how to answer that because they're not being very clear on how they're funding it. They will fund PSWs through those nine agencies in home care. So they will fund it through that. And then it's based on a needs assessment through the clients, or they fund PSWs through long-term care. That is really the only way the government's involved. In regards to keeping PSWs, in regards to retaining them and recruiting them, they're not doing enough. And there's no set minimum standard. We don't have any regulation. We don't have any PSW association, which I'm working on, by the way. But we don't have an area that, to raise that level of professionalism where people don't see PSW work as a stepping stone to nursing. It really needs to be a profession of choice, and it should be because it's really important. It requires a high level of skill, but because society has always viewed care work or as something that's not worth really putting money on it, it's hard to kind of change that mindset. So that's our goal, I think, is to really try to change that mindset a little bit and empower workers to stay in that field. And then hopefully the government will start to see that this is kind of the rope. But I think it's all like we have seniors organizations pushing for better home care. We have, some unions and some workers. And I think just systemically it's got to change. And that's really hard. I don't see that happening for quite a while, unfortunately.
But in the meantime, the people in your region are benefiting from your worker co-op. Have you made plans for expansion? I think you were in the Peterborough region and Durham as well. What's on the horizon for growth?
So we actually did. I think we're one of the, I don't know any other co-op that's actually a PSW co-op, anyways, that's done this. So we decided to find a way to we created what we talked to you about before, but the Federated Co-op. So it's called the Cooperative Care Alliance. And this came about because we started getting a lot of great feedback about wanting to start their own co-op or people wanting a co-op to get services from all across Canada. So we were like, okay, let's see if we can find a way to do this. What the barriers seem to be is that women and PSWs and new Canadians who are in the care sector don't have access to the financial supports or even the education necessarily to start a business. And there's not as much community sports for that. And not only that, PSWs can't really quit their job and then try to start a business and build that up. So we wanted to bridge that gap as well and create a space where PSWs and care sector workers can gradually, in a supportive environment, move into entrepreneurship in the cooperative style, and start their own HCWC co-op. And they would be able to start their co-op at no cost in the beginning for them. So no upfront costs. We would give them all the supports, all the resources, HR. We provide back office support such as consulting right from the beginning, consulting, co-op development, articles of incorporation, financial plans, feasibility studies, business
That's
plans.
huge. That's huge.
And then on a maintenance level, we give them all of the H like the HCWC branding, all of the resources, the scheduling app and everything. And we also have a bookkeeper and invoicing. So we also do the payroll, bookkeeping, invoicing, taxes for them. So the PSWs can be owners of their own co-op. They can be founders of their own co-op. They can be managers, they can direct it, and it's all community-based still. So they decide based on their community's needs what that service is going to be, what the prices will be based on that community, because there are going to be different needs from urban to rural or, so we didn't want to have this overarching model that expands nationally and dictates the terms everywhere, because that's one kind of counter to what a co-op's about anyways. So, and also that's not how home care should be. It should be local and community based on that need and the needs, right? So York Simcoe, HCWC York Simcoe was established and incorporated as a fully autonomous not-for-profit co-op, HCWC York Simcoe. And
Can
it
you tell
really
us,
is
sorry,
kind of a
Danielle, where is that region? Where would that
it's
be,
in
sort
like
of?
kind of Keswick, Stouffville, south of Markham area. Like it's kind of a GTA area.
Right. But
And so
they're up and running.
they are up and running. They have clients, they have their board of directors, they have they've been fully incorporated, financial plans, business plans, all of that. We have and so and the founder and I work fairly closely together. And they're doing well. Like they've had, everyone has bumps in the road starting out. The nice thing is I had those bumps and I was kind of alone. My goal is to allow the new co-ops to learn from my bumps and kind of help them do it in a little bit more of a supportive environment. So it's been going really well, and it's great too because it expands the model of HCWC, so that branding's there, and definitely getting more recognition from people because they're seeing that it's growing, and we're sharing resources again, right?
Where else?
We're looking in, well, Toronto, but Toronto is, I'm almost worried to expand there because it's happening fast. So that's a lot. So we have to be prepared to take that on. But we do have PSWs in the Toronto area, and we have several clients in the Toronto area. So we're working to kind of just establish a co-op there. And also in Northern Ontario in the North Bay area. We're working on developing something in that area, and I think next up will probably be Durham. And again, that's quite a bigger area. That's Oshawa, those areas. So we're slowly doing that because if we move too quickly, I think it's a slippery slope into the regular system that I'm trying to kind of move against, right?
Right. Well, Danielle, like in a couple of years, a few years here, you guys are really taking off. Like, I love the idea of the Care Alliance. This is what we were talking about with your Simon Berge a couple of years ago, and now that's really coming to fruition, right? Is Simon still on board with this?
Yeah, so Simon's the CFO. He's involved and he does a lot of the money stuff and manages that. I'm the executive director of the Cooperative Care Alliance, and we have our board of directors, and we have a committee that's involved, and every member, so every HCWC co-op and every PSW member are member owners of the Cooperative Care Alliance.
That's wonderful, 'cause like you say, you're getting the word out, and letting people know that there is an alternative. Now, I read on your website that you attended a conference in Haliburton called Aging Together as Community,
Community.
and you spoke there in the winter. And I guess the community up there in that region is looking at these issues, right? People do want to age at home. Nobody wants to go to an institution, but they need to have support. What was your takeaway from meeting with folks in that region?
Yeah, well, first, they are really, like, for a smaller region, I mean, they're really, really organized grassroots organization that it can really rally and put together a great conference, but also they're determined to make change in their area. And you could see that, and that's all it really takes is community activists, people who are really interested in realizing that this is an issue. Home care in rural areas are really a concern. So I think that's what it takes is just a group of like-minded people to kind of come together and go, okay, I see your problem. I wonder if I have a solution for that. That's what was happening at that conference. A lot of really creative ways and a lot of different alternatives as opposed to long-term care. And it wasn't an attack on that system. It was just, this isn't going to work for all of us. What can we do to stay in our community and stay in home? So there was talks of naturally occurring retirement communities and creating one there. NORCs, there was talks of just family paid caregivers, the co-op model. The one thing that was an interesting takeaway for me was that people didn't know what a personal support worker actually is. Because all across Canada, there is probably 90 names of and titles of what we do. And in Ontario, we're all over the map because we're not a regulated profession in Ontario. And that was surprising to a lot of people. So they're like, well, how do you know if they're okay? How do you know if they meet these standards? How do you know? And I'm like, well, you don't really. And I'm like, so I'm giving them that criteria. But those are the things that I think they're starting to realize that this is a very disempowered workforce, even though we are the largest, demographic in healthcare, but we have the smallest voice. So I think that was a good realization for the people who are potentially recipients of the care that we have to look at it from the other way as well and make sure that the PSWs and the people who are going to be caring for you or your loved ones are well taken care of, well covered, well regulated, all of those things is going to benefit. Yeah.
That there's certain standards and criteria.
Yes.
And you know, in so many cases, it's the family members who do this work, right?
Yeah.
For as long as they can,
yes,
juggling their own lives, often, you know, with young ones and elders and that. Danielle, it's been really great catching up with you. In 2 years, your organization, your co-op, has really taken off, and really educating people about how this can be a valuable way to deliver care to seniors who want to age in place and empower the people who are giving the care. As you say, predominantly women, mostly women, many marginalized newcomers to Canada, and being part of a co-op, a worker co-op, and having to say, that's really tremendous. And the Care Alliance is a next step to bring this forward. We thank you so much for everything you're doing there, and we'll keep on this story. Hopefully, we'll see a lot of growth in your sector in the next number of years.
Hopefully, we can make our way to BC too. And
that would
and
be great. It's needed everywhere. Okay,
yeah, I
Danielle.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
That was Danielle Turpin, founder and managing director of the Home Care Workers Co-op and Cooperative Care Alliance. If your community is interested in starting a co-op for local home care workers, reach out to Danielle at info@homecareworkers.coop. Let's take a break, then come back with more of Each for All, the Cooperative Connection.
100.5 means non-commercial, listener-powered, community radio. 100.5 means music, public affairs. And arts programming.
I wish I loved the human race. I wish I loved its city face.
You won't find anywhere else on the radio dial. 100.5 is not owned by a huge corporation. We are owned and operated by people like you, by your community. 100.5 CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Find our complete program schedule at cooperadio.org.
Give me that!
It's mine!
I want it!
No, it's mine!
No, give it to me!
You have to give it back!
Stop! Instead of fighting, try working together. Honestly, openly, in a spirit of caring for others. And tune in to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM, on your dial, and online at cooperadio.org. Try cooperating. You'll feel better for it.
And we're back. You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM and online at cooperadio.org. Tonight we're exploring how co-ops can make a difference for seniors and those that help them age in place in community. Sally Lockhart is the chair of the Community Care Seniors Co-op in O'Leary, Prince Edward Island. We first spoke in 2021 about a plan to build a cooperative residence for seniors right in the middle of town. The goal? Seniors staying connected to community, retaining as much independence as possible while receiving some care. This is a story of grassroots creativity and the hard work of locals to better the lives of their elders. I got a progress report from Sally recently. She begins by reminding us about her region of PEI. Have a listen.
Our community is what we call sort of Central West Prince. So if you're looking at a map of Prince Edward Island, there's a claw on the left-hand side of the island, and we're literally right in the middle of that piece. Our catchment area, there's about 4,000 to 5,000 people. Our O'Leary, where our home is being built, there may be 400 on a good day, 500 residents. So we serve a much larger population. We know that in PEI, we and in Atlantic Canada, we have a higher portion of seniors than some other parts of the country, although BC, of course, is another place that has a higher portion. But we also, in our area, have a higher portion of seniors on fixed incomes that don't have the flexibility to pay privately for expanded housing, home care, whatever, beyond whatever the province is willing to support them with. So we saw the need, and our community saw the need, and were very clear that they wanted us to pursue this and to develop a new community care home, which I'll tell you what that is in a second, but a new home that would have private rooms, private half baths. So community care is somewhat like assisted living in other provinces, but in our province, you have to be assessed and approved to live there. So you need a certain level of care, pre-long-term care. But in community care in PEI, you actually have staff that will oversee you taking your medications, whereas in other parts of the country, if you have a relative in assisted living, you pay for that service, for instance, on top. Otherwise, it's the traditional, for us, private room, private half bath. Housekeeping is included, meals are included, activities are included, medication management, any kind of assistance you might need depending on the level of your assessment. You get more hours depending on your level of need until you reach a point where long-term care is what you need. You need nursing care, in which case then you would stay with us until there's space, basically, in long-term care. So that's what we have done. What we found fascinating was when we started out and did our community survey in 2017, we had to phrase it to say, if you know someone that you think might need this level of care, what do you think they would need? We could not say, if you need this level of care, because people, seniors were telling us at that point, there is no way they were going to community care. They were staying at home until they either died or got into long-term care. When we go out to community groups, seniors groups, basically they're saying, can I bring my own drapes? What's the waiting list? How soon can I get in? And so the attitude has changed absolutely, totally.
Sally, why do you think that is?
I think it's because we are definitely community owned and operated. They see themselves in this. We've had close to 300 donations, everything from the $20 is to the $25,000 is from community people. We see pride in the building, pride that we are state of the art. We will be the new benchmark in some ways for this level of care because of what we've been able to include in the building. And I think it was just an attitude shift, realizing that there's more options out there for people.
And you're running it, you call yourselves a cooperative.
Yes.
But you're also able to give tax receipts as a charity.
Yes.
Let's talk about the cooperative part here. I know co-ops are involved in community care in PEI. Can you explain how the co-op model works there? Because I believe there's a co-op in Tignish nearby for community care and one thing and another.
In Wellington, which serves our Francophone. Those were our partners and models for this. And then we have one other not-for-profit home. But it's interesting to note, all the not-for-profit slash cooperative homes are west of Summerside. Most of the others, there might be one other on the island, and it's probably rural if there is, but the rest are all for-profit enterprises. So the cooperative model in this instance is that the residents are shareholders, so they have a say, as does their family, should they be shareholders, and that that we are run by a community board. And the whole philosophy is to ensure that the person is the center and the service to them is the center of the model, as opposed to making money.
Right.
So it's a totally different way of looking at care. We want our staff to say, I could live here. I certainly would want my mother to live here, or my first cousin, or whatever, you know. So we're definitely, that's the model of care we're looking at. So, and the cooperative model lends itself very well to that.
Sally, I remember when we talked 3 years ago, you said that the building, which has now been constructed, and we're going to talk about this beautiful residence called the Willows, was to be right sort of in the middle of town, not isolated somewhere, but that the residents would feel that they were still part of the community with good walking distance to services and things like that. That was a conscious decision. Tell us more about that.
Yes, when we did our survey, we had over 100 seniors respond to our survey about what they wanted. And so, as I mentioned already, they wanted private rooms, private half bath. They wanted it affordable, and they wanted it central. They wanted to be able to walk and see and, you know, be part of things. That our current home is very central. In fact, we're located just behind it. So you know, it's in the center of town, the co-op grocery store and the liquor store are right across the parking lot. The bank is now closing, so it will not be there, but the credit union is a half a block down the street. The local restaurant and post office is probably short city block, if that, from us. And so we are fairly confident that we will get foot traffic in terms of community people coming in. And I'll tell you why, because we will have activities for them, but also that when they go to the grocery store, if they're stopping in the liquor store or whatever, they'll be able to stop in and see somebody because it's right there. We even have a cannabis store in the neighborhood and the hardware store. So everything is very central.
Because we know that isolation is one of the worst things for seniors. We learned that, I mean, for anyone, but we learned that especially for seniors during COVID. So the fact that it's smack dab in the middle of town, and I believe I heard you say that you are going to have community-based activities right there at the facility. Tell us about that.
We were able to protect this roughly 40 by 25, 30 foot room that we got separate funding for through the infrastructure program of, federal infrastructure program. This community room will be not needed as a dining room 24/7. We have two smaller dining rooms on the second and third floor, so the 50 residents can actually eat in those two dining rooms. This community room will have a coffee kiosk, kind of a hangout area in one corner with coffee and whatever available. And then the room is also set up for high-end AV equipment, so that during COVID, I don't know if you experienced this, but we were able to have meetings in person and via Zoom. So the capability in this community room at one end people from the community will be able to join in our activities going on in that room, whether it's armchair travel, whether it's exercises, whatever, from their community or from their actual residence room as well, if they're not feeling well and don't want to come down.
Oh, that's great.
So we have that capability, and that was all because of COVID. We learned how to use Zoom and learned how to connect. So we have that. And then we've been working with our seniors club and our community recreation person, who seniors is a part of her mandate, looking at how we can use the space. So we've already started talking about some of the musical events that will happen there, because we've set up, and the AV for sound systems and plug-in stuff, you know, whatever they're called, for bands and stuff, is all built in. So it'll be much better for a lot of the community artists to come and perform. We'll be able to have dinners there. We'll be able to have just the regular cards, you name it, bingo, whatever. Yeah. And so community seniors will be able to come. So the seniors club, as well as residents to this
room. It sounds like it's going to be a real going concern there. I mean, a real hub for the whole community. And this and this will, you know, the goal is to help seniors age in place, with dignity and support. And as you said before, so many of them years ago said, no, they're not going anywhere. Of course, people want to stay at home and be independent. But that's difficult without care, and again on a fixed income. Now, this is a beautiful building. We'll have it up on our website. It was given the name the Willows. That name has a unique meaning. It was chosen for a reason. Can you tell us about that? I think it's a twofold reason.
Yeah, so it's a multi reason, if I can remember some of the pieces. And just before we get to that, I must also mention, now post COVID, if I can even say that, we will be able to reach out to our daycares and our schools so that we can have many robust programs intergenerationally as well.
That's the best.
And again, groups are just keen to get back into that. You know, even teenagers interviewing seniors on their life stories or whatever, all that kind of stuff, hopefully that's can great. Happen again. So the Willows, we were really debating what we were going to call this and whatever. And one of our board members is our historian. And so she was going through one of the history books that had been written about the community and discovered that a building which still exists across the farm field from us was originally a hotel called the Willow. And the woman who ran the hotel had come from Tyne Valley and had brought some willow slips from that community to her new property. And that's sort of how it all evolved. Those trees are long gone, but we decided the Willows gave us a dignified name and also two other things. It's very, the willow trees are very important to our First Nations, Aboriginal communities on PEI and across the country. And the willow bark is used for medicinal purposes. The willow tree itself is used in basket making, etc. And also, so that was important to us. But also willows bend. Willows can take a lot of abuse. They can last a long time. They can withstand a lot of stress in their lives. And they're great at sucking up water. And we're built on a swamp. So that was
And they're durable and they endure like our seniors, like our communities.
Yeah, they endure. So once we started playing around with the name, we said, that's it. That's our name. Yep.
Well, it's a terrific name. And as I said, the building is beautiful and it's got a lot of light and it seems airy. And I think people will enjoy living there. When are you set for occupancy?
We're set hopefully in April. Part of what happened was what we've learned is something you think will take 1 year takes 3 years. So it was a very labor-intensive and long process to get through the various levels of review and approval for our funding.
Right.
And so we ended up getting caught then in the rise in interest rates and the rise in construction costs and the supply chain issues. So our project, because it was delayed because of all these levels of review and stuff, ended up costing us more, significantly more, and has slowed us down a bit, because even though we've had marvelous construction folks, they can't control everything.
Right.
One of the things I did want to mention that I didn't know much about until we started this project is something called a designed build concept. So rather than your architect doing all the construction drawings, you put it out for an RFP, a construction company comes in and says, well, really, you should do this, this, or this, or this. We had an RFP for the construction company, picked one that we knew was a team player. They worked with our architects and us to come up with the final construction drawings. So they were able to say, well, if you do this, this, and this, you've saved X $100,000 off the bat. So everybody knew exactly what the budget was going to be and exactly what was going to be needed. So there's no cost overruns. There's no nothing.
That really helps, doesn't it?
It really has helped. And we've had meetings. We have site meetings every 2 weeks with the architect, the builder, and three or four board members and whatever trades need to be there at the time. So we know the electricians, we know the plumbers, they know the concept, they know what we're trying to achieve. And so I feel we have kept on budget and pretty close to timing because of this, because everybody's been on hands on deck and have spotted things before they've become issues. But supply chain issues are out there, and so we are delayed waiting for two major pieces that we're working on right now to try and resolve. And then, of course, we have to be inspected and then licensed before we can move people over. The other new piece since we talked is the owner of the current facility has decided that he will close when we open. So he has about 25 people that would be homeless if they don't move to us. So our first residents will be these that's residents from the villa that still qualify for community care. Now, the good part of this is that then some of the staff were able to be hired by us and will then transition over.
That's terrific.
That's terrific. The other interesting thing that happened was we had a fish plant in the area that went bankrupt, but some of those workers were permanent residents of Canada, so could work elsewhere. And a number of them wanted to get into the healthcare or healthcare related fields. So we actually didn't have the problems or the issues, challenges around hiring that we thought we were in rural PEI, because people want to work for us. They want to be in this new state-of-the-art building. So
right. So you're providing employment when people might have become unemployed, and developing new skills, right? Working with seniors, personal support workers, and other areas of healthcare. It's
and
great.
Also cooks. We have at least one, if not two, Holland College students who will do their placements with us. So there's there's some neat stuff.
Yeah, it's a real spinoff for all kinds of people in the community. So you'll have these 25 residents from the villa who will move in, and then how many more people can you accommodate? And do 25. You have a waiting list?
We do, 25. Our original waiting list was up to over 100, but these were people that had expressed interest just to let funders know there was a need. That list has been whittled down through death and people that aren't ready to 81. So we have to pick starting from the beginning. Of people that have been on the list for 5 or 6 years now, will be assessed first, and for the second 25. Yeah.
Do you think a future goal is to build another facility?
Well, what do you think? Well, the rumor's out there already. We were at a fundraiser there last Sunday, and one of our board members was approached by somebody, and he was told that we were already planning our second building, and that, of course, was news to him.
Are you actually going to plan a second building?
Not me.
Okay, you're done.
The new board, if should they choose. I mean, we've designed our co-op so that it's not limited to this one enterprise. It's not limited to either one building or one service, but it's to enhance a quality of life for seniors so they can age in place. Right. So the next board, we're starting the board transition now to a governance board, because of course we were a development board. And very hands-on. So the next board can decide in their strategic planning what's the next step. I mean, we will have this bump in baby boomers for the next 20 some years. And then after that, we will not need the same number of this level of service. So,
I mean, there's definitely the need in the community. Last thing I want to ask you is, how is the fundraising going, and who are your sources of funds, major funds? I mean, you have a really unique fundraising campaign I've seen online where you've said, you know, 25,000 or sorry, maybe it's too much. I'm just going off the top of my head.
2,500 to furnish a
2,500 room. To furnish a room. I think that's really puts it in terms that people can really get their head around. So you've got that fundraising campaign. How is that campaign going?
Well, our original goal when we started this project, we said we wanted to raise $500,000 in the community. So the first part was the capital campaign. And that was, we committed to having $200,000 from the community to as our share for our application to CMHC. We did that, and then the money kept coming in. And we only did a mail out because this was COVID. So we haven't done huge fundraisers at all. It's all been word of mouth, personal visits. So as of, so we had, you know, 250,000 or so in the first go round. Then with this Furnish a Room campaign, we've had some very good fundraisers on our board and their spouses. And they have been going out to individuals and to community groups. So you could furnish a room for $2,500. You could furnish a sunroom for $5,000. You could furnish a house for $25,000. A house is 10 rooms. So as of today, I would say of the $250,000 that we've earmarked for this campaign, I'd say we're at least $140,000 to $150,000 on that. And what is interesting, I have it written down in terms of we've had 253 separate donations in total from the beginning from individuals or small businesses or foundations. No amount has been greater than $25,000. So we haven't had the big corporations coming in because we're not giving naming rights. We had decided that early on. So this is truly a community fundraising. Yeah.
That's and wonderful. So you'll
get
by
there.
The
end of it, yeah. I think we will. I think pretty close for sure. But some of our challenges now, of course, is it may cost more than $5,000, for instance, to furnish a sunroom because the regulations around infection control have been increased. And so the chemicals now needed, as we understand it, to clean furniture is very hard on residential grade furniture. And of course, as soon as you get to health grade furniture, first of all, it's not homey. And secondly, it's very expensive. So we actually have a meeting Friday to look at what our options are. And because we want to be environmentally cognizant, we don't want to buy cheap furniture that we'll be replacing every 2 or 3 years because the vinyl is worn out because of the chemicals, you know.
Right.
So we want to invest now into a better grade of furniture that hopefully will last us longer. So
well, Sally,
anyway, it never ends. There's always something.
You're knowledgeable. You've got a health promotion, a healthcare background, direct work with seniors around, fall prevention, disabilities, and that. So you're a vital resource for this. And but you're one of many in the community who have helped to get this off the ground. And as you say, hopefully occupancy with the Villa residents in April and others in the community, and using the cooperative model for ownership. Sally, thanks so much. It's really great to catch up with you and to hear how the residents of West Prince, of O'Leary, are coming together to help seniors age in place. It couldn't be better. So maybe we'll catch up with you down the way. And we wish everyone all the best. And do let us know when the big door opening event occurs. We'll want to hear how that went. Thanks so much, Sally. Bye for now.
Thank you for thinking of us. And it was great to catch up. Okay. Take care.
All the best.
Bye-bye. Bye.
That was Sally Lockhart, chair of the Community Care Seniors Co-op in O'Leary, PEI. For more information about this co-op, go to www.csclpei.org. That's it for this edition of Each for All. Thanks to my fellow cooperator, Joshua Peterman, for putting all the pieces together. I'm Sandy Goldman. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and have a cooperative week.